I've been talking to some of you for about 40 minutes now, so I'll introduce myself. My name is Daniel Kogan. I'm a program manager in the SharePoint team. And today's talk is about the search-driven publishing model. So we're going to spend about an hour talking about the model. I'm going to show some examples of some of the entry point UIs where you need to go and do some customization and tweaking. But really, what I want to do is, in this hour, make sure that you guys sort of have that thing in your head as a model. This is how we think about publishing pages or assembling pages moving forward. Big caveat, everything that we did in the past, if you know SharePoint 2010, that model's still valid. There's nothing wrong with it. You can do it. This is just a different way of doing things. And we believe it's really a more effective way of doing things for a lot of reasons, and we'll talk about it. But you shouldn't think, oh, I have to go and throw everything I've done away. Like, that's not the message I want you to get. Yes, it's a new model. It's not rip and replace the old stuff. After yesterday's session, I had a bunch of people ask me, oh, well, what do I do with what I have already? And I think really the short answer there is, if it's working for you and there's no business reason why you need to go and undo that thing, I wouldn't touch it. When you start thinking about how to go and enhance it, how to build the next thing, how to sort of get more functionality out of what you have, then you should really start thinking about what it means to do sort of the search-driven publishing. So that's sort of make sure that no one walks away from here scared about the stuff I have doesn't work anymore and it's not valid. That's not. Do you have a question? Someone raising your hand for a good reason? Okay, good. So, I know, it's like no good reason, just raising my hand. Okay, so search-driven publishing model. When I started putting this deck together, I actually asked myself, what are the good examples of when to use search-driven publishing? And I went through a bunch of examples and I had all these slides. And then, to be perfectly honest, I kind of landed on the reverse, which is, when would I not want to use search-driven publishing, right? And in other words, I think that search-driven publishing is the way we're going to do things, and there are some exceptions, and I'll talk about them, but I really believe that for the vast majority of customers, for the vast majority of scenarios, this is the way you want to start thinking about publishing pages. And it's not so much, oh, do I pick between one or the other? It's you should start to learn to default to search-driven publishing and only look at the exceptions for when I might do something else. Okay? So that's the important part. I don't think about, is this a search-driven publishing model or scenario? I think of it as, yeah, of course, we're publishing pages. I rely on search to do that. And let's talk about sort of some of the things you need to consider. I wanted to think about sort of the model that we had versus the new model. And as I mentioned just a couple minutes ago, there's nothing wrong with the model we had, right? It works, and it works great for a lot of people. And I sort of thought of it as, it's a unicycle in the sense that you kind of have to be a little bit skilled to do it easily, and it'll do what you want it to do. And if that's what you're into, it's okay, and you can keep doing it. And your friends may laugh at you. No, there's nothing wrong, right? If that's what you want, that's what it does, and it works great. But the new model is really about trying to get this thing to be more efficient, trying to get more out of what we have. And so this is my silly attempt at showing you guys that unicycles are perfectly fine if that's what you want to do. So the advantages, though, of the search-driven publishing model. Someone asked me earlier about, site collections and farms. And yeah, it breaks down all these boundaries, right? It's really about if the content is in my search engine, will I be able to consume it? Yes. So it's how do I get my content into my search engine is the really important part of all this. And we'll talk about that. It's no longer about my content is in my site collection or it's in my list. It's really if I've crawled it, I can serve it, and it feels like it's native SharePoint content. And that, whether it is SharePoint content or not, right? My search engine can index a lot more than just SharePoint content. It eliminates a lot of the challenges that people have had in the past, especially a release prior to the most recent, around large list thresholds. We don't care, right? We don't care about where you're putting your content because that's not where we're going to fetch it from. You can author your content and put it somewhere, then you index it, and we query the index to get it back. This allows us to do really dynamic publishing. And by really dynamic, I mean we can start making some interesting business decisions around what content we show people, because it doesn't matter where the content is. It doesn't matter if you have a huge tree of content or if it's a big flat list of content. We don't care. We just run a query. We retrieve the content. And therefore, it allows us to separate sort of the presentation from the storage. Just a little anecdote. Yesterday in my session, someone raised their hand saying they still use CMS 2002, and then they came up to me and confessed that they actually still use Encompass Resolution, for those who know. And this is actually really important to those customers, right? The idea of being able to separate the storage from the presentation is something that people have been trying to do effectively for well over a decade and a half now. I think this model is really the way you're going to do that. This is about, I build my storage the way my business thinks about where content goes, and I render my content the way that, you know, I want it to be presented to my user. And it depends who my user is. I might show it differently. I may show a particular piece of content in one area or in a different area of my website, depending on who's looking at it. So when we talk about search-driven publishing, the question that I always get is, well, so what? Like, what's new here, right? We've had search on our websites for a long time. This is not about searching my content. This is really about publishing and republishing and targeting the content we've already crawled. So it's not that someone enters a search keyword or a search string on my website and we return content to them. It's we've assembled the pages by running queries against a search engine. From the end user's perspective, they have no idea that search is behind it, right? So it's not about search on my site. It's about search enabling my content. And I want that to be really, really clear, okay? So I'll repeat it again. No, I'm joking. So this is at a very high level, and my build slide didn't work, so now you get to see the entire thing right from the front. It was going to be really dramatic as it built slowly, but okay, let me point at it since it's not building. So we have our content. There's a SharePoint content, documents, catalogs, pages, and so on. External content, I alluded to the fact that we don't really care if it's inside SharePoint or not, although hopefully you guys are using SharePoint to the fullest extent that you can. And we're going to crawl it. And this is really a search question at that point, right? I'm not the search guy, so I'm not going to be able to get into a lot of detail around configuring your search system, but really it's about the scopes that you define and how you run your crawls. And you go and you get all that content, and it's now indexed. The interesting thing about the indexing that we're going to do on some of the new SharePoint sites is that some of the lists and libraries can now be declared as catalogs. And what that means is, if it's a catalog, the content is intended to be used cross-site collection, cross-web app, cross-farm. And therefore, when search crawls it, what it does is it will crawl it in a special way. In the past, search would look at our content in a pages library, strip out all the HTML, and just index the content, right? Now we're actually preserving all of that so that we can ask the search system for the page, not just for the content of the page. That's an important distinction in this new model. So on the publishing side, we have the content search web part. We're going to talk about that. You guys probably already all know the content query web part. We have the terms in the term store. We'll talk about those. We have managed nav. Who's heard about managed nav already? Only half the room. When you leave here, you have to understand managed nav. If you don't, make sure you ask. We have the publishing page. So the way this works is our publishing environment through the web part framework and the pages publishing framework is going to interact either to SharePoint directly through the publishing API, that's the way we've always done it, or it's going to interact with the search crawl index. And when we do that, we've added a few things in SharePoint 2013. You're going to be able to go and not only ask or query the search system for content, you can actually be able to manipulate the query results as they come back. So you can add query rules that say, because I know something about this user, or because I have a particular business interest, or because we're trying to promote something, even though we get these 2,500 search results from this query, let's thin them down, or let's promote this one to the top, or let's eliminate one, or let's... And so these query rules are just things that we can go and manipulate the results with. They don't actually change the query itself, but it'll manipulate the results of the query. And with recommendations, so we've done a lot of work in 2013 around being able to look at the usage analytics and then make interesting recommendations. So you can imagine that I say, I look at this piece of content, other people, when they look at this piece of content, also look at these other pieces of content. We believe that we should recommend it to you because they're related. So now, in this publishing model, not only can we ask for all the things from search that match, we can say all the things that match, oh, and the things that are related, or the things that we recommend. And so we have this new idea that content has this intrinsic recommendation or related concept to it. Okay? So that's at a very high level, the architecture. So what are we talking about today? The building blocks of what we're going to talk about are this new publishing model, the content search web part, which I keep alluding to, we'll get to it right away, display templates, which are the way that we sort of skin or rebrand the results, the query builder, which I just talked about very briefly, the query rules, which I talked about very briefly. The query builder is part of the UI for the content search web part. We'll talk about it. It's essentially the place where non-technical information workers are going to be able to go and craft queries so that they can return the right content for them. We have the content catalogs, which I mentioned a few minutes ago. Really, the important thing about content catalogs is that don't think of them as a thing, or B, that it's product related. Yes, product catalogs are a type of catalog. Okay? What's interesting about catalogs is that it's a new behavior that we add to lists and libraries. We also went out of our way to help you guys, so you don't even have to think about configuring these. If you want to do a product catalog, you can go and actually create a site collection from a site template, which is product site. Okay? And all that does is we have a list. It has a bunch of predefined schemas for you for content types. And so we did a bunch of the work for you. But you could just go do it yourself. You could create a library, add the content types you want, flip the switch, make it a catalog. Okay? So catalogs aren't this new thing. It's really a new behavior on lists and libraries. And manage navigation. So manage navigation is an important part in this puzzle, because if you don't have all your content sitting in one place, the pages library or the document library or whatever it may be, then how do we organize it all, right? We're getting content from all these different locations. We magically assemble it in a page for you. We create these websites. We need hierarchies for them, right? Most users navigate websites through hierarchies. The way that we give you these hierarchies are through the managed metadata taxonomy infrastructure. So as a result, we get managed navigation from the managed metadata system. Okay, and we're going to talk about that. So, content search web part. Blank page. There we go. So, content search web part. Here's a website. You've seen it probably 12 times by now in this conference. Our Contoso Electronics. This content here is most likely a content search web part, because it's executing a query. That one's probably easy to understand. But this one up here is also a content search web part. It's got three results, and it's just skinned to look like a slideshow. Okay? So what I want by the end of the hour is for you guys to be able to look at a page and start recognizing that this thing here is most likely a content search web part. And if it's not, you should ask yourself why. Okay? There are cases where it's very valid that it's not. But in most cases, you probably want it to be a content search web part. Here's another example. Now, here's one that's interesting. And you go, well, that just looks like an authored page. And it might be, I can't tell by looking at it, right? But it could also very well just simply be, and in this case it happens to be because I picked it myself, this is actually a page that is going out and doing a query for a specific single result, right? Queries don't have to return 10,000 items. If I have a very well-crafted query that's asking for a page, this is what I get. I get a page that is rendered one time. And so you can have a template, as it were, so a master page, a roll-up page, that has a query in it that we pass a parameter to, and it depends how specific or how broad that parameter is, what this page is going to look like. If I give you a category that says laptops, well, we go and fetch all the things that are about laptops, and then we better figure out how to organize the 10,000 items into a single page. But if we actually ask for one very unique thing, we're going to get one page back, and we can show you a single page. So it doesn't have to be a handcrafted page here. This is the beginning of what we call cross-site publishing, and we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Another example, right, just a query. Starting to look familiar, right? The interesting part, this one, okay, fine, it looks like that, and it looks like the other page. But here, we have a bunch of documents that are related to the things that are here. And the way that we got here is because someone clicked on cameras. So we take the camera's parameter, the camera's term in the term store, and we pass that term to the queries, and we say, in this case, find me all products that relate to cameras, find me all PDF files that are about cameras, and so on and so on, right? So they're all content search web parts that simply get a parameter, and the easiest way to get the parameter is by the user clicking on the navigation, then we know what they're looking for, right? So I said at the beginning, no user actually typed in my query box the word camera, but they implicitly did by clicking on the term camera. They're looking for cameras, I execute the queries. Okay? Oh, one more. Okay. So, all great. Life is perfect. Content by Search Web Part, no problem. It's easy to add to a page. It's super flexible. It's kind of like the CBQ without borders in the sense that it crosses site collections and farms, and it's easy to theme, and we'll talk about all these things in a second. It's really easy to edit, and obviously it's not all perfect, right? There are some differences, because at the beginning I called out that not every use case is going to be right for a content search web part. So, probably the most obvious use case is, well, this is my old slide, index latency, not search lag time. sorry, old slide deck. So the index latency, or the search lag time, is the one concern. So people have often come up to me and said, well, I'm taking this huge dependency on search now. What's going to happen to my site? And yes, it's a huge dependency on search. On the other hand, we've done a huge investment on search, and our search system is now able to do continuous crawling, and it's going to be fresh, but it still requires a crawl. And if that sort of two-minute crawl time is going to be a problem, then there are use cases where you might want to stay with CBQs. And so I thought about sort of what are the real big downfalls of trying to use content by Search Web Part. And so I sort of pushed on this thing for a while, and quite frankly, as far as I'm concerned, there are very, very few scenarios that I could come up with in which this should be a deal breaker for you. I grant you, someone in the room is going to say, oh, I have one, and that's fine, I believe you. But I think that for the vast majority of scenarios, a two-minute latency, or whatever your configuration happens to be, probably just fine, right? Like, there are very few applications that need to-the-second publishing. And even then, to-the-second publishing is always a little iffy, because if you really rely on it, you run the risk of network issues. Who's ever heard of network issues, right? No network issues, not here. Okay, so the truth is, if you have a use case that needs to be to the second, you probably have other things you need to worry about anyway. So I feel like this is probably a pretty good sort of cost benefit. So let's do a little bit about go through the content search web part, and of course my other laptop went to sleep. Give me a second. Okay. Okay. So, Contoso, everybody recognize Contoso, not a problem, right? Let's go and look at, well, let's start at, sure, we'll start here. So we're going to go in and look at a particular, say, tablets. And so you'll see that my URL has got tablets in it. That's a term in the term store. We're going to get to all that in a little bit. But essentially what's happening here is we're taking that term and we're executing a query here that goes out and fetches that content. So if we go and edit the page, first difference, what page am I editing, right? So I talked at the beginning about this is a different model. This is where things start getting a little different. Someone asked me before we started, in this new model, if I create a new page, where does it go? Well, it depends what you mean by page. So this is not one page per se. So I can go here and I can show you that this one single page has 30 different corresponding URLs. And it'll come back in just a second. All of these URLs are driven by that one ASPX page. Now, these are persistent URLs. They don't change. If you don't want them to change, you don't have to worry about them. The system thinks of them as 30 different pages. But at the end of the day, it's one ASPX page. So the first question that I was asked there when I said edit the page is, whoa, you want to edit the one page that edits all of them, or do you want to edit the one that's about tablets? Because if you want to edit the one that's about tablets, we now need to break away. And we're going to make an instance of that thing, which is the tablet page, right? So while everything is grouped together as derived from one ASPX page, you can edit them all. The minute you start breaking away, in the future, you're going to need to edit individual ones. Okay, so with that, we'll go back and actually edit the master because it'll just be that much more interesting or easier for me anyway. It'll come back in just a second. Come on, network. So the network will eventually return a page, I hope. And what we're going to do is just, there we go. We're going to go in and just look at sort of the CBQ. Oh, sorry, the CBS, the content search web part. Edit. This part should be no different, right? Everybody recognizes this. And in just a second. Come on. Yes, no. Aha. Uh-huh. Audience participation, thank you. My laptop's over here, my screen's over here. So, okay, so first thing that we're going to see is we have this thing called the query builder. So since these are queries that are returning this content, we need to actually execute a query. So in this case, I'm going to be able to make some decisions about the basic query. Really cool thing is we can actually show you the preview of the results. We can go into sort of advanced mode if you really care. You can actually see the query. If you are a power user, we can show you refiners. So if you think about my website right down here, it had a bunch of refiners. So why? Where do those come from? Well, I could build a content search web part that just returns refiners, and I can put that on the page. So this page is actually a bunch of content search web parts. We'll talk about the refiners a little bit later in more detail, but the refiners are just properties that are on my content that are indexed by search, and they're set to be managed properties, and I then use those to refine my content. So different terms in my term store, laptops could have different refiners from, well, the example I was using yesterday, different refiners from air conditioning units, different refiners from cameras. Right, the category probably has a set of properties that matter for refining. So some refiners may be global, price, availability. Some refiners may not be. If this is not a products website, but maybe an intranet document knowledge center, you may have things like refiners around how recent the document is. It may be about categories of content in my enterprise. It may be about audience, whether it's public or private or industry. So those are things that you want to think about when you start adding metadata to your content. And then we have the ability to decide how we're going to sort the results, and we can go in and make some other decisions around query rules. I mentioned at the beginning that I said we have the ability to manipulate the results, and the way we manipulate those results is through query rules. So this content search web part will or will not respect the fact that we have query rules running. And I'll show you query rules in just a few minutes. But the idea here is the web part is going to say, ah, if you have business rules that I need to pay attention to, I'll go look at your business rules. I'll execute all the business rules, and then I will show the results that, you know, corresponding to the business rules I've executed. And then you can actually execute tests and manipulate the query if you get really geeky. I suspect that the majority of our information workers will never get to this last Let Me Geek Out tab. Most of them will be here. And the interesting thing is, if you're an IT department, if you're the information architect at your enterprise, you're going to be able to deliver pre-baked queries. We ship a few, but you can actually just deliver those queries, put them on the system so that your information workers can say, oh, I want to create a page, and I want all the content that's here to be related to my user or related to the content or the most recent. And that query could be pre-baked, and all they do is pick it. So nothing could go wrong there. Well, I say nothing could go wrong. I'm sure something could go wrong, but we'll be fine. Okay. The other interesting things I talked about earlier are these display templates, and we're going to come back to them in just a little bit. So that's high level. The idea of the content search web part. It's really just go to the gallery and say insert new web part. And in the web parts, we're going to go and say it's a roll-up web part. It's called the content search web part. And you apply it. And that's it. OK, so let me back out of here and go back to my slides. Display templates. I just mentioned them briefly, but let's talk about them, and then we'll go look at them. So the display templates, just like the queries that I talked about a second ago, we ship some. We expect you to make some. The cool thing about them is that it really is just HTML and JavaScript. Okay? And because it's just HTML and JavaScript, I expect that most of you are going to be able to go and make really cool, crazy display templates, and deliver them to your users. And your users are going to be able to go to that UI we're just at and pick from the selection box and pick different display templates and apply them to their content. So in this case, you'll see that same content, more or less. In one case, the display template probably said only show 6 instead of 8. But it's essentially the same content formatted differently. Over here, same idea. I have 3 results. And I just applied a different display template to it, and it looks different. And the great thing here is that the query could be something you give your users. The display template is something that maybe the marketing agency or whomever gives your users. And they can mix and match them. And so they're really going to be able to go and create pretty cool-looking websites with very little technical prowess, right? They're just going to click through the UI, pick a couple of different displays. There's a bunch of sessions on how to do this in detail during this. I think there was one. In fact, if you're here, you might be missing one. I believe there's one going on right now. But that's OK. It's recorded. Go and look at how to do display templates. Okay, the display templates and the publishing model are hand in hand, because one is about how to get the content, and the other is this new model about sort of how to skin the content. So I mentioned earlier that we would just go and look at them. Actually, let me go to a different site. actually, I wanted the authoring site. There we go. This will take a second to come up, and it may challenge me for authentication. We're going to actually go through and edit a page or possibly create a brand new page and modify it if it comes back. If not, we will just use a different page, which is what we're going to do right now. Flexible demoing, that's what this is all about. Okay, so we're going to just edit the page. No, all's good. All's good, no problem. Look, this one's back, we could do that. Okay. Let's go in here and say edit page. And say edit template. This is where we were before. And we're gonna just go here and edit the web part. And we will just pick a few display templates, just to give you an idea. See, I learned. Whoever it was that helped me out before, thank you. So we're just going to go here. There's a bunch of different ones that we ship. Some of these we actually built just for the show, for the conference. But this is sort of the most dramatic difference. I'll just pick that. And look at that. Very cool. In real time, preview. Now this thing is going to be a slideshow that's just iterating my content. So I could go and manipulate the query, get different content, but whatever content it is, it's going to skin it through the HTML, JavaScript, display templates. So I think this is a really powerful sort of new user experience for creating content. I'm going to be able to go and say query, presentation, and assemble them just by clicking through the UI. That is something that we've never been able to do before that I think very cool. So you guys don't seem that excited. There you go. Okay. Enough. Save it for the rest. Okay. Let's keep going. Query Builder. I showed you this briefly. I'm not going to go into too much more detail in the UI. I think it's probably best for you guys to play with it. But the important things to think about here, it's that it's really a UI-based query tool. I don't have to understand a whole lot of difficult, you know, query syntax. It does it for me. Now, if I do understand crazy syntax, I could go and change it because you can edit it. It's really for the information worker. It allows us to test and preview it, which is super important, right? Because I guarantee you that as you start playing with this, you're going to start getting pretty creative about making really cool queries. And you don't want that to go live until you're pretty confident, right? Even if it's an intranet, you probably don't want it live. So you can preview and you can test them out. And it has the advanced mode, as I said before. If you happen to be into, you know, handcrafting your queries, we do that for you. We can let you do it. And then you can go and manage the refiners. So we talked about refiners a little bit. We showed you this already, so I'm going to keep going. Query rules. So I've talked about query rules quite a bit, and I'll be honest, query rules can get pretty technical, and query rules can get a little bit more complex in sort of a management point of view. We're not going to go into that much detail here. There's a couple of sessions around them, but what I want you to understand about query rules is just how powerful they are, okay? Query rules allow you to go and do just a bunch of stuff around how I treat the content that's returned from my search index. So if my search index has 25 valid results, it's not true that they're equally valid to every user. And if I know my users and I have business logic that helps me decide which things go to which users, I can write query rules and say, oh, you are a sales guy in my company, I'm going to put this report on top because it means something more to the sales guy than if you're the, I don't know, receptionist. So I think it's important that you think about, I can make these rules and I can decide how to change the weight of things, or I can eliminate things, or I can promote things. But what you need to think about is, how do I make these business decisions, right? we are not going to be able to give you the magic, we know your business, this is what's important. We don't know that. We can tell you what's related. We can tell you what other people are doing and tell you, hey, people that do this, do that. But at the end of the day, there's going to be some business work that says, I need to think about how I treat my content and who I target my content to. So that's an important thing. Query rules aren't magic, but they're super powerful, so you guys should go and invest some time in understanding them. UI-based, again, we think it's really important that you don't have to be, you know, a professional coder to be able to do this stuff. It's really focused for the information worker, but I think in this case it's probably a little bit more sort of the information architect is probably a better way to think about it. And it's all about manipulating the results. In the query builder I showed you earlier, you have the ability to go and set the query rules, say, yes, I want query rules, I don't want query rules. And in central admin, you can actually go and edit and manipulate them. And I'll show you that in just a, well, right now, apparently. I'll show you that right now. No, now. Okay. So let me just get out of here. Or we could just close that browser. Oh, here we go. Okay. So what I want to do is go to site settings. And easiest way to find things is by, okay, query rules. So far, so easy, right? Well, look, it's empty. Okay. What we're going to do is there's a bunch of different types of query rules. I'm going to just show all sources. While we're working on it, I get to talk. Okay, there we go. So here are the query rules. You can see that they have states where we can say it stopped, it started. So you can have these business rules. You can define them. What's important is that there is sort of a hierarchy of how these rules get executed. So one rule can trigger, and then another rule can trigger, and they will work on the same chunk of content. So I get my 25,000 results, and I apply the first rule, and I apply the second rule, and I keep filtering and applying this rule until at the end I have the result set that I want my content search web part to render. Okay? So this is the place where you go and look at and edit and create the query rules. And on the content search web part, you say, respect the query rules or not, right? It's kind of, I care about them or no, just give me the result set. And even if I get the full result set, I still have some control in the content search web part that says, well, I can rank them differently. I can order them differently. I can only show the top 10. I can do, so I, there's still a lot of manipulation with the results that I can do at the endpoint, but this prevents me from getting all of the data if I don't want it or don't need it. Content catalogs. I mentioned this at the beginning. I will reiterate because, like I said, today's session is all about you guys getting the model in your head. I don't expect you to be able to go and configure it all at the end of this hour because we're not going that deep, but it's really about understanding it. The way I think about this is there's sort of three easy steps in catalogs. There are two ways that you can get a catalog. I mentioned this already. I can go to a catalog and just enable it, or I can start from create new site catalog, okay, new product catalog. It's a site template, and you can create it new. Either way, it doesn't matter. One is sort of the handcrafted, you know, artisan kind of way. The other one is prepackaged. No, they're both equal. It doesn't matter. Then we index it, and then you connect to it. It's really three simple steps. But it's important that we get all three steps, otherwise this isn't going to work. And I am clearly simplifying this here. There's a bunch of configuration on how do I enable it. There's a bunch of interesting questions around indexing. Do I want to have, you know, multiple indexes? You know, what is the scope of my index? So there is some thinking and some questions you need to go and answer. And then connecting, same thing. On the connection side, how do I want to consume this? I don't want all my catalogs to be consumed necessarily by all my sites. And so we're going to show you the UI around consuming them. But it's really about those three parts. I declare it to be a catalog. I then index it. I then go somewhere else, a different site collection, a different farm, and I consume that catalog. So the question typically gets asked, well, how do I know where the catalog is and how do I find it? And when I try and connect to it, how do I get to it and how does that happen? Well, I mentioned at the beginning that part of making something a catalog is making it behave differently with the search system. So if I say that my library is a catalog, when search crawls it, I mentioned at the beginning, it will do a bunch of nice things for me, like not strip my HTML out of my content so I can have that in my index. That's great. The other thing that it does is that it recognizes that that list or library is a catalog. And so then when we want to go and connect to a catalog, we ask search. We don't ask SharePoint. We say, what catalogs are available? And search says, well, I indexed these 20 libraries and they all told me they're catalogs. So here are the catalogs that are available to you because you have permissions in search to see them. If you didn't, if they were ACLed in a way that you don't get to them, search isn't going to return you the catalogs. It's not going to return you the content in the catalogs. So search in that point is sort of the gatekeeper of the content that we're going to serve up. Question? Yes. Are content catalogs available in Office 365? I believe the short answer is no, but I actually may be mistaken. The reason I hesitate is exactly why what I just said, that it really is just a setting on the library, and so you can set the setting, and you can still consume that content. You won't be able to consume it using a content search web part, which is sort of the other half of the story, right? But there are other models. Somebody in the room, Pat, Seth, I saw both of you guys. Is that true? Presumably, yeah. Very definite maybe from the guy in the back of the room. Sorry. We're still working through that story. Okay, so the important part is the search index is going to advertise the catalogs, as it were. I think the important things to think about when you think about a catalog, well, we've talked about this already. It's clearly integrated with search. It's available across farms. We have this notion of a product catalog that's a site template, so that one's easy for you to do. You don't have to go and configure it yourself. You just install it. It's a setting on a library. I'll show you how to do that. And it allows you to define our URL format, as well as it has an implicit connection to the site structure. So a catalog will have a connection to a term set in the term store and say, this column in my catalog is the way I intend to organize my content. The values in this column come from the term store. Therefore, when it's time to show the navigation on my site, I will ask the term store for the hierarchy, and I'll show that as the site nav. Okay? The entry points, pretty straightforward. Is that a question or a stretch? Okay. Does that mean everything in that catalog has to be tagged? Yes. Well, no, I hesitate because there are some ways that you could say the answer is no, but let's make the baseline yes. Like, it'd be weird for it not to be tagged, but I could imagine some cases where it would be possibly desired. Simple scenario. Assume that all your content in your catalog should be tagged. Okay? The entry points we're going to go to now. Okay, so I want to do two things. One is I want to go to my authoring site. So, question, yes, while I go to my authoring site. Why don't you just let me do this, and while it takes some time, I can answer a question. Yes. Yes, as I mentioned earlier, the security trimming is done by our search system, right? So search respects the ACLs. It's not going to give you content from search that you don't have permissions to. Okay? So In our authoring environment, we're going to go and look at the catalog. So right here, you can see that I have no catalogs, okay? If I wanted to connect to a catalog, I would say connect to catalog, and it will come back with, oh, here are the catalogs that are available. So really what this statement is here are the things that have been shared as catalogs. Now, it just so happens that it's my demo environment, and they're all sort of coming from the same place, but in the enterprise, you can have a catalog from one farm, from another farm. It really doesn't matter as long as they're all sort of meeting at the search index, as it were. And then you're going to be able to go through our connection wizard, and we ask a bunch of questions. This is where I said I cheated a little bit when it's three easy steps. There's going to be some configuration around how do I want the catalog to connect? How do I represent the URLs? There's a bunch of detail that this session is just not going to have enough time for, but I really encourage you guys to go and play with this because this is the way that you're going to be able to get content from farm A into farm B. Okay? Now, how do I make something a catalog? Well, I could just go to, go to my site content. And let me just go to, products data sheet. So this is a big document library full of PDF files, I believe. And we're going to go into the settings of this document library. Any second now, we will do that. Okay. Settings. Catalog settings. And here we have some decisions around how do I set this as a catalog. You can see that I can do some things around the catalog items themselves, what filters we're going to have, or how we connect to it, and so on. Again, a bit more detail than I want to get into right now, but the idea here is this is a setting on my library that the minute I flip that switch, it's going to say, I'm now a shareable thing. So on the other side, when someone says, I'd like a catalog, and we advertise the list of catalogs, this one would appear. Okay? The question is the content actually moved? So making something a catalog does not change the library and its content in any way. What happens is when the search crawler comes along and indexes everything that's in there, it will make an indexed copy, which is not a full fidelity copy in most cases, so it's not a move of the content, but it is another copy of some of the content, right? It'll have the body, it'll have some of the markup, it'll have... So there are two instances, as it were. The way I think of it is, think of the search index now as a persistent cache of your content. So you're going to talk to search to get the content back rather than talking to the library directly. Yes, sir? Can you ask search to refresh a specific catalog? I'm not the search config guy in the room. Is there someone that's better at search than me? We can answer that later. It's a totally fair question. I believe the answer is the answer is yes by the gentleman in the front of the room. I'll take that as a yes. Okay. And he's the guy that saved me before when I couldn't find... Would you like to come and co-present? Oh, there you go. Actually, good point. Yes, there is an option in the library that says re-index. Thank you. I'm going to have to buy you a beer tonight, sir. Okay, let's keep going. We're getting close to the end. So I talked about nav a little bit. The interesting thing about the navigation model now, I've mentioned this before, right? So we have the term store. The term store has these hierarchies. The hierarchies now can be a little bit different than what you might know in SharePoint 2010. So in SharePoint 2010, we had hierarchies, term sets. The term sets were intended to be used for tagging content, That's still obviously true. We also now have the notion of the intended use of a particular hierarchy may be for something more than just tagging. So the intended use might be navigation. And so in the term store, you're going to be able to say, this term set is a nav term set. So that when I go to the nav settings, I will be able to see that as a nav term set and use it for navigation. Okay? Yeah. Okay, that wasn't quite as thrilling as it should have been, so let me rephrase it. You can now have completely flexible navigation that no longer has pages in the URL because it's not driven by the SharePoint API. How's that? Okay, so let's go take a look at this, actually. Oh, actually, I want to be over here. Okay, term store. How many people use the term store all the time? The rest of you should really learn how to... No, just okay. Okay, so this is our demo world here. Can you use columns instead of term? Well, columns are mapped to terms in the term store, right? So the way that you choose the navigation is going to be by pointing to the term store that your column is using. Yeah, so that's actually a good point. So I said there are ways to think about different intended uses for a term set. Is it for tagging? Is it for navigation? You can actually have a term set that is for both. There's nothing wrong with that, right? There are good reasons why you might want to separate them, but in the sort of simplest base case, it's totally fine to have a term set that is a tagging term set and a nav hierarchy term set. So, yep. Yep. Yeah, so that would update the metadata, but the way the model works is the navigation itself, we have a new nav provider that says, instead of looking at the SharePoint hierarchy to show nav, I'm going to ask the term store for the hierarchy. So the navigation will always point back to the term store. Sure, but then you wouldn't have the page content itself, right? Presumably, someone authored the page, and so, yeah. So it depends on the nature of the page. Yes. Okay, so we'll keep going. For those of you that do use the term store, you'll notice we have a bunch of new tabs in the term store. So the most interesting one that I was just talking about a second ago, I'm going to be able to say, is this a nav? Oh, sorry, I want to go here. So intended use. So this is for navigation, this is for tagging, or this is facets, right? I haven't gone too deep into the facet stuff. We talked about it briefly, the ability to decide how I show and filter the content on my site. The important thing here is that the term store is now becoming more than just a place where I hide the metadata that I use for tagging. It's a place that I'm now going to expose the hierarchies for my website. And the reason we have this idea of separating the tagging term set from the nav term set is that I could have multiple versions of the nav, right? I can have different hierarchies depending on the use case. I could have different hierarchies depending on the site collection. So I may want to organize my hierarchy one way for my intranet because it represents the business units, the way we think about our company. But I may want to organize my hierarchy differently for my public-facing website because my customers know my products. They don't care about my business units, right? And at the end of the day, those two hierarchies are really coming from one big master taxonomy that you use for mapping and tagging your content, okay? So these are a few things that you can do here. We talked a little bit about the term-driven pages. So remember when I clicked on a nav item, we said, hey, when you click on this item, pass that parameter to the query. We can actually point and say, this particular term in the term store may need to use a different ASPX page so it has a different category roll-up page or a term-driven page. So there's a lot of functionality and interaction between the site content and the term hierarchies. Just as a plug, only because it's my feature, we added a new UI to the term store for custom properties. So those of you who've been working with the term store only through our object model and API, we've exposed the custom properties now, so end users are going to be able to go and make their own name value pairs of custom properties. And then all of, yay, someone got excited, that's great. Someone as geeky as me about taxonomy, thank you. So then the next thing that we need to look at is the navigation itself. So the navigation on the site, this page is now slightly different than it used to be. The important part is that you can now choose to use, instead of the site itself, you can choose Manage Navigation. And when you choose Manage Navigation, you then need to tell us which term set. Okay? There's a bunch of new functionality here, but I think the most important thing for you to take away, question. Right before the important thing, but yeah, go ahead. Yes, so the question was, I can only associate my nav term set to one site collection. That is true, and that is a deliberate design decision on our part, because using that same navigation for multiple sites gets weird if suddenly your sites need to have different navigation. And so you say, well, no, I want to move this node up or down, and suddenly I affect my public-facing website because my intranet manager decided to do something. So we deliberately made them separate. One-to-one mapping. What we've done, though, in the term store is a new feature called pinning. So we let you have multiple term sets, and if you really want them to stay in sync, you just pin from a master term set into navigation A term set, navigation B term set, and so on, and you make your changes at the top level master, and it'll reflect down. Okay? Cool feature? Wow, this should have been a different talk, but okay. I'll be here to talk taxonomy later. No, I'm joking. Okay. So important parts here, you can set the navigation. I think you guys can play with it, but this is sort of a very important part of the puzzle. So the actual session blurb said I was going to talk about the new search-driven publishing model and cross-site publishing. I haven't really talked about cross-site publishing per se, but the truth is, as I was doing this, my build slides don't work. I have an old deck here. As I was doing this, I thought to myself, cross-site publishing, is this a feature? Is it a scenario? Is it a technology? Is it a wizard that we put? It's kind of all of them, really. Really, what cross-site publishing is a model for how to use your content on your website. So it is a combination of using the search index as a persistent cache, using the content search web parts, using managed navigation, using the query rules. You put all those things together, and as a result, I can create content in location A and expose it in location B, C, D, E, F. Right? It's that simple. I mean, it's an hour later, now it's simple, right? But it's that simple. So it's really about create content in an authoring environment and use it in any of your SharePoint publishing environments. And so that's, I think, the important message here. We've now broken down these walls around, I have my content in my library, or I have my content in my site. It's, I have content, and I've indexed it, and I want to reuse it. That's the important message. I think there's a few things you want to know. Cross-site publishing is not content deployment. And I don't mean that as a, you know, negative or a positive. What I mean is don't confuse the two. A lot of people, oh, well, I guess I don't need content deployment anymore. That's not the statement. Content deployment in SharePoint moves SharePoint artifacts around. If I need to be able to get this list over there, or these SharePoint things from this environment to the other, it's still content deployment. But if I want to write my content in one place and reuse it in other places, I no longer need to use content deployment if I have a common search index. And that's the if, right? I need to make sure that all the environments that want to use this content have access to the same search index. If for some reason they don't, then you probably want to start thinking about content deployment again, where I move things from one place to the other. Cross-site publishing, and effectively this entire scenario we've been talking about, requires the publishing feature to be enabled. So if you have some reason why you're not going to do that, this is not for you. And it requires a catalog. And I should have put a little asterisk there. The truth is, as I said earlier, it doesn't absolutely require a catalog, but it's the easiest way to think about this. I'm sure that next year at SharePoint conference, someone's going to come up to me and explain how they've done some great magical thing without a catalog and they use content cross-site publishing. I believe it. There are ways to do it. We've done it. There's some probably interesting use cases around it. But the simplest thing to think about is catalogs are what enable us to share content across sites and site collections, farms, web apps, and so on. So the idea of cross-site publishing is I create content in one place, and it's going to just appear in many places. Kind of a silly slide, but really what I want you to think about is imagine Contoso Electronics, or in this case, Contoso Energy, has their public-facing website. They publish that. They don't want to recreate the content or copy it when they put it on their intranet or their other branded site. A lot of companies today have the same content in multiple brands. This is the easiest way to think about doing that. Okay, I've talked to this quite a bit today, and we're sort of running out of time. I want to have quite a bit of Q&A time. So simple architecture diagram, catalog, search index, term store, published site. The way that we think about it, but I'm sure there are other models, you have an authoring environment on one side, and you have one or many production environments on the other side. The many. Okay. Another way to think about this is that the production environments may actually be multilingual. That's a kind of a cool way to do it. There's a whole session around that at the conference, how to use multilingual publishing and the catalogs to allow you to distribute content from one authoring environment to many different translated publishing environments. And that is it for those slides. I don't know why. Old deck, we don't want to see these slides. Okay. So with that, I think I'm going to end and open up the floor for Q&A. Before we do that, I know people are going to run off the minute I start doing Q&A. So I have a responsibility to tell you that you must fill out your questionnaires and do feedback. My boss is in the room. His boss is in the room. I don't know who else is in the room. You guys have to give feedback, okay? Positive feedback. No, I'm joking. Feedback, real feedback. Please step up to the mics. Please go to the mics or I'm not going to be able to take the questions. It's going to get kind of crazy. I have a few people in the room. Seth, where are you? I forgot to mention you. Seth is somewhere in the room. If you could step up and help me answer questions. There he is. And Pat, I'm sure I'm going to need help answering questions if you could step up. So let's go. Those of you leaving, leave quietly. Yes, sir. Nothing's changing in the SLA of search, if that's the basic question. I mean, we've done a bunch of work on search to improve it, but I'm not sure I understand the question.
So the question is, for 2010,
Yeah.
Search is
Okay.
So usually they have
okay.
But in this new feature, your SharePoint environment, without search, they
right, so without search, this is a non-starter. This is about search. So if you in your enterprise do not have the same level of responsiveness to your customers on your search side as you do on your publishing side, you may want to revisit that because search is critical to this model.
Okay, so in this case,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is search-driven publishing. Yes, sir.
Okay, in
over there. Yep.
Yeah, you showed a predefined query library. What's the scope of that?
The queries. You want to talk to? So the queries themselves, you're going to be able to go and pre-make these queries. So I'm not sure what the scope is. You mean, is it like globe, like enterprise-wide or library-wide? Is that
sure.
Your question?
Yeah.
The other thing is, if you've shared out a list or a library as a catalog, when you connect to it, it creates a result source for you. So the scope for that result source will be the catalog. But
the question is, go ahead. So the question is, if I have 20 queries that someone's made, how wide spread can I distribute them in the enterprise? Is that true?
Pat can answer that.
So I believe there's enterprise level ones and site collection scoped ones. And so if you go to site collection admin and define them there, that'll just be for that site collection. And if you go to central admin, it'll push it to the whole farm.
Can you guys keep entertaining questions while I break down?
Sure. The man in the white. Right, so I don't think it's, maybe there's some search folks here. I don't think it's only through the UI. It's just rather than, I think a lot of the time before you had to handcraft XML files on the file system, it's just that now you can do it through the UI. I believe there's a server OM as well for that stuff. I think so.
Is there any way to take an external list and turn it into a catalog?
So what Dan was saying was by marking it as a catalog in SharePoint, we crawl extra data and we put an entry in the index saying, hey, here's the catalog. Doing an external crawl, as long as the content you need to render is in the index, then the wizards might be a little bit more complicated because the index entry isn't in there. But it's ultimately, if the stuff is in search, then you can pull it out and render it. And I think that the query rules is the same answer as the predefined queries. I think they have them at the site collection scope and the service scope. And tenant admin scope for 365. Well, hopefully you have one search service for the 40 farms. So you'd go to the one search service, I believe, and configure them there. I could be wrong, though.
Sorry. Yeah. No. I think so. I realize there's lines on both sides. There are people coming in for the next session. This is what I'm going to recommend. Pat, myself, and Seth can step outside. We can entertain questions for a little while. I have another session in about an hour, so I'm going to have to run soon. And we will be at Ask the Experts tomorrow night, and we will have whiteboards, apparently, and we will be able to do a lot more detailed answers. So let's take it outside, as it were, and we'll go from there, okay? So I apologize for cutting people off, but we really want to give up the room. Okay?